This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington. Today, we're talking about new words in the dictionary. Browse through the entries of most any dictionary, and you might call the words "so September 10th," meaning in this case an adjective phrase defined as so petty, shallow, or outmoded as to be irrelevant. As our lives change, so do the words we use. It's the job of dictionaries to keep up. Later this month, the latest edition of the Encarta Webster's Dictionary of the English Language gets released, and many of the editions are connected to the events of September 11th, 2001. We'll find out what they are in just a minute, but first, we want to hear from you. What new words are you curious about? What new words do you think should make it to the dictionary to dictionary status? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK, or send us an email at totn@npr.org. Joining us now from member station WVTF in Roanoke, Virginia, is Anne Suchanoff. She's the general editor of Encarta's Webster's Dictionary of the English Language. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So did I use the term September 10th correctly?
You absolutely did. You used it sort of like Ron Silver did, and he was quoted in U.S. News and World Report just last week. There are September 10th people and there are September 11th people. I'm one of the latter. So we're looking at September 11th as well. We have some citations that predate his usage of that as an adjective. We have some relating to September 12th, in fact. And so those two words are on our watch list, although September 10th did get in.
So September 10th is now, if I go to your dictionary, that's a phrase that will be explained to me.
Yes, it is, and it will be listed as an adjective, a September 10th person, or she's so September 10th.
Wow. And September 11th, I presume, has been in already for a while, or is it under the phrase of 9/11?
It's under the phrase right now of 9/11. We watched that word, or it's a, what I call a numeronym, for a number of years to see whether it would end up being styled with a slash or a dash. And we enter both. And we also have two senses of it, which is really a sad day in lexicography, I must admit. The first sense has to do with the events of September 11th, 2001. The second sense, which has evolved only in the last year but has exhibited staying power, it might be defined as any catastrophic terrorist attack perpetrated on a large number of innocent, unarmed people. And we have evidence for use of that. For example, the Madrid train bombings were called Madrid's 9/11. They were also called Madrid's 3/11. The Bali bombings were called Australia's 9/11. And most recently, the attack on the Russian school was called Russia's 9/11.
Wow.
And that's an example of how violent changes or sudden changes in usage, particularly in a media communications-driven world, can change the language almost overnight.
So are the media the driving force for new words that creep into the language? I mean, the events that the media report on, I suppose, but the media, are they the drivers?
The people are the drivers. The people create the events. The people use the words. And the media is the conduit, sort of the transit mode, as it were. You know, back in the old days, back when I was a little girl in the 50s, it took a while before Sputnik got into the language. But it did make it into dictionaries within about a two-year period because it revolutionized the way we looked at science and math and national security and aeronautics and space exploration. And this is a pattern that has always been in force in English. People cause the language to change.
What are some of the words that have come into the language after September 11th? What are some of the other terror-related words?
Well, of course, belt bomber came in, and Al-Qaeda, which means the base in Arabic, gained entry. Osama bin Laden is entered in the biographical names, a part of the dictionary. Ground zero has always been in the dictionary with lowercase letters in a totally different sense, but we had to enter a second entry with the capital G and the capital C, referring to the site of the World Trade Center towers. And then, of course, you see, it was the terror on the U.S. that spawned other words such as unlawful combatant, asymmetric warfare, improvised explosive device, UCAV, which is an unmanned combat aerial vehicle, which then in turn, after the war started in Afghanistan and Iraq, then medicine, the language of medicine started to change and the public became aware of it. Now instead of medevac per se, we have CASEvac, which is a casualty evacuation by helicopter from a combat zone. We now have something that no one had ever heard of before outside the medical community probably, coagulating bandage, which is a clot-stimulating dressing that's used to stop heavy arterial bleeding in traumatic wounds, and this bandage can actually be pulled apart in pieces and inserted into different wounds depending on the size. And then there's cash as opposed to MASH. We all remember MASH from the Korean War. That's a combat support hospital. And then, of course, the words that were spawned by 9/11 and the war, it was sort of a domino effect. Now we're into law. We end up with the Patriot Act, with Patriot Day, FISA courts we had before. They mainly dealt with drug trafficking and spies, but then they became much more important in the homeland security area.
What, FISA courts? What is that?
Mm-hmm.
What is a FISA court?
FISA stands for Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and that was passed some years ago to grant, I think it's a specially chosen panel of federal judges who have high security clearances who can sit and take evidence from the Justice Department about people who are either spies or terrorists who might do us harm, people like that. And some of the ordinary rules of procedure and civil procedure, civil rights, are not followed.
Okay. Let me see what some of our listeners are curious about. So let's try a call from Sean. Is it Bloomington, Minnesota? Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Oh, well, welcome to the program. And what's your question?
I was just wondering when Google as a verb was going to enter the vernacular.
Ah, okay, good question. And Suhanov, what about that?
It's already in the vernacular, but as I understand it, it's a trademark. So it functions sort of like the trademark Xerox. And even though we always say, I'm going to Google something and find out about it, we use it orally. I would be a little bit unwilling to put it in as a verb in the dictionary, just as I wouldn't want to put Xerox the verb in, because once you start using trademarks as parts of speech, it can be a danger to the proprietary status of those trademarks, because trademarks usually aren't supposed to mean anything. Exxon, for example, isn't supposed to mean anything. Starbucks.
Kleenex? What about
isn't.
Kleenex?
Kleenex is a trademark, and people insist upon trying to lowercase it, and lawyers get quite upset about this, by the way.
Well, I believe it. All right, let's take another call. Let's go to Phil in Elkhart, Indiana. Phil, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm a former teacher.
Okay.
And I often heard in class and in society the word nuclear pronounced nuclear.
Uh-huh.
And since so many of us are using the nuclear, is that now an acceptable pronunciation?
Well, it's one of those pronunciations that I don't think will ever pass the smell test, even though many presidents, aside from the current one, have used it. Jimmy Carter was one, and he was a nuclear submarine engineer. I think that the standard pronunciation is very difficult for some people to get out of their throats, and that is why this pronunciation persists. Maybe in a few more decades it will gain respectability, but not for now.
Well, that brings up an interesting question about this whole notion of, you know, how do you look up, if you want to know how to spell a word, how do you look it up if you only know the misspelled version?
Well, that's one thing we tried to deal with in this dictionary. We enter 980 misspelled words in the A to Z vocabulary list, such as SEPERATE for the correct spelling of separate. We put them in semi-boldface type, and we draw a line through the incorrect spelling and give a boldface cross-reference to the correct spelling, because it's a pervasive problem now, spelling and grammar. Throughout our country, it's a shame. People are relying way too much, I believe, personally, on spell checks and electronic assists in order to take care of issues with syntax and spelling and usage that they really should have mastered in school.
Right. So do you have a team of advisors to help you decide which ones make the cut?
Are you talking about the new words or the usage notes or the spelling words?
The new words.
What we rely upon generally as a team is evidence that we gained from a North Atlantic reading project in which our editors were looking for evolving new senses of pre-existing words such as, say gaslight, meaning to frighten someone to death. It comes from the movie Gaslight, obviously, or embed as an embedded reporter. Because our electronic means, which would be our 200 million word corpus, would not pick up new senses. So we use both electronics and the human brain over time. We also do Google.
Uh-huh.
We use other internet devices. And what we look for is staying power. We don't want to put ephemera into the book because space is a great consideration.
Well, Anne Suhanoff, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this segment of the program, but thank you so much for joining us. And we'll try to use words properly, I promise. Anne Suhanoff is the general editor of the newest edition of the Encarta Webster's Dictionary of the English Language out later this month. She joined us from member station WVTF in Roanoke, Virginia. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.